Welcome to Get a Move On, the podcast for movement lovers who are fed up with their injuries and want to enhance their all-round health. On this podcast, I'll help you change how you think about pain and illness so you can drop the frustration and move freely. I'm Amy, an osteopath turned yoga teacher and mindset coach. On this pod, I'll be talking about the joys of pain, injury and illness, the mind-body connection, and how they relate to our movement practice so you can get a move on. Hey everyone, and welcome to Get a Move On with me, Amy Slevin. There's no Jamie today because instead I'm talking to a special guest, and this came from a listener request to talk about Feldenkrais, which is a movement discipline that I know very little about, but I've dabbled into it a little bit and I think it's quite cool and I think it has relevance for movement people, injured people and people in pain. And hopefully we're going to talk to Victoria Walsley, who's going to tell us more and elucidate the subject a little bit. So here we go. Victoria, hi, how are you?
Hi, Amy, I'm good. I'm hot, but I'm good.
I know, dying of heat, huh? Okay, so you are a Feldenkrais practitioner and teacher. So my limited experience of the classes of Feldenkrais that I've done have basically been like, they're quite nice. There's been a lot of lying around on the floor, rolling around, writhing, and being quite floppy, which is really enjoyable and it feels super relaxing, but I don't really understand enough about it, but I would love to find out more. And I kind of have a sense that it's like about being effortless and moving with ease. So could you tell us, what is Feldenkrais?
Okay, so let me say, it's not fluffy at all and it's not about relaxing, but I can understand why you got that impression. You know, it was created by this guy, Moshe Feldenkrais, who's a doctor of engineering and physics, and he is just super sharp. It comes into the realm of neuromuscular re-education, okay, which is why it looks so different to a lot of things. So in that word, obviously, you've got neuromuscular, not just about muscles, but about the nervous system. Education, so not just about exercises, but about learning. In order to understand what's going on in a lesson, you kind of have to look at what's behind it. What is Feldenkrais trying to get at? It's trying to enable people to move more effectively, as you said, with more ease, to do whatever it is they want to do in their life with more ease, but also more effectively, more efficiently, more powerfully, potentially, if they need to, and with less strain and with less pain. So it's a huge thing. You want me to go into the background?
Yeah, because I think, isn't it related to judo? I've seen a couple of YouTube videos that he was a judo practitioner where he sort of did some judo stuff and then he thought that there was interesting things in judo that he then used to create his method. Tell us more.
Yes and no. I think we have to go back behind it. The thing that it invites you to do really, and judo was part of how he learned to do this, but also, you know, he was an engineer, his wife was a pediatrician, so he understood about developmental movement. He had a knee injury that he learned a lot from. He was an extraordinary polymath. What Feldenkrais is looking at is, how is it that you, Amy, put your movement together? How do you organize your movement? Below the level of any judo skill or anything, how is it that you do anything? Because it turns out that we all are very unique in the way that we move. And we know this, you've probably had this kind of experience, you know, you're walking down the road and you see somebody in front of you and they look exactly like someone you know. Oh my God, their hair's the same, their clothes the same, their build is the same, and you're about to rush up and say, hi! And then you go, oh my God, no, it's not them. And how do you know? You know, because there's kind of something wrong about the way they walk, the speed of it, the rhythm, how they're using. You can't put your finger on it necessarily, but it's not them. And then you see their face and you go, oh my God, it really isn't them, thank God. Or from the other hand, maybe you go to a loved one from a train station and in that huge crowd on the concourse, you see them straight away. Okay, build, clothes, sure, but something about how they hold themselves, something about what they do.
Right, and the way that they're sort of their funny little kind of quirks about how they move or the way they stand or
exactly
the way that they walk or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it's so unique that for a long time, handwriting was used as a way of establishing someone's identity, even in law. So why is it like that? It's like that because we learned to move. We didn't come out of the womb, you know, all wired up and ready to go. So if you were a deer, or some kind of herd animal. And you were born, you know, you get, we see those wonderful videos of them looking all kind of wobbly and weird. And then within minutes, within hours, they're up and they're running, and they're running with the herd, or they get to be somebody's lunch. You know, a little bird in a nest, it doesn't take all that long as that horrible moment when you think the cat might get it. And then it's flying. But for us, it's a very long apprenticeship.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm just going to interrupt you for half a second.
Okay.
Speaking of young animals, this is a bit grim, but I'm going to say it anyway. There is an Instagram page called Nature is Metal. And it basically, oh my gosh, like it shows the truth of nature. Slight deviation from Feldenkrais, but it shows like what really happens, what they don't show you in like the David Attenborough nice Christie documentaries. Whereas literally, you know, the young one is like, it's almost like it's on its way out of the birth canal, and then something comes along and takes it away. So very much like the truth.
It's a miracle we survive, because we take so long to be able to sit up, stand, walk, let alone run away. But what it does mean, if you see a baby, you know, its movement is all like so random, isn't it? It's all over the place. It can't do very much except suck and poo and eat and breathe and digest not very well. So all of that has to wire in, and we learn it. And we learn it in relation to, okay, we're human beings. We have a particular frame. We live in a field of gravity. But we also learn it from who's around us, from how they behave towards us, from our emotional experiences, from the kinds of things we like to do as we grow up and we get older, the things we're drawn to, the activities. Maybe we have a talent for them, but then also we spend a lot of time doing that. So we learn that. And then there are like things we don't like to do, and people we like to hang out with and be seen as part of that tribe, and people we really don't want to be identified with, and a million different things that go to making us, you know, you, Amy, move in a particular way that is not how I move. And you're going to take that into all those amazing things you do. I've seen those videos of you. My God, you know, on your trapeze and all the rest of it. Terrifying. But you take all those patterns with you. I take all those patterns with me into whatever I do. And some of them are going to serve you really well, and some of them aren't. So Feldenkrais is intervening at that level. Do you know how you move? It's a difficult thing, because here's the other thing. A lot of movement is a done deal before you do it. Because we've learned it, you know, we've gone through that process of making connections in the brain, of wiring up the neurons that wire together, all that stuff, patterns that are really, really well established. And all of that. So here, I've got a cup of tea here. If I'm going to go and pick it up, I'm not going to think about how I do that. I already, through many experiences, know what it's like, how far away the cup is, the weight of the cup, the heat of the cup, how to shake my hand. And it's not just the muscles of my hand and my arm that will do this. As I bring my arm out, everything down my back in the spine is going to have to recalibrate to cope with the weight of my arm away from me, mm-hmm. let alone the cup. Everything in my pelvis, my legs, my breathing might change. You know, what I do with my eyes affect it. And all of that is a done deal before I even start. And then as I do the movement, the experience of it might not be quite like I imagined. You know, the feeling of it might be different. My sensory system is giving me feedback mm-hmm. on what I'm doing and saying, oh, no, it's a bit heavier than you thought. It's a bit further away. It's a bit this. It's a bit that. I'm modifying all the time.
Right. So you have to make like constant little adjustments.
Yeah. But the thing is that a lot of it is done at the start. We're intervening at that level of the movement is pretty much done in your automatic system before you do it. So how do you get to that to change it? If you have a pattern that isn't helping you learn to do something, or is getting in the way, or is causing you pain, how do you deal with that? You can correct it as you go, but that's a bit after the event. So that's why Feldenkrais lessons look so weird.
Okay. Oh, that's good to know. So that's really interesting. Basically, in osteopathy, what you just described about the readjustment of all sorts of body parts in relation to just picking up a cup of tea goes with the osteopathic principle that the body is a unit.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then it's all integrated, and it's all, you know, what you do with your big toe might affect what happens in your neck.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So if you go to a Feldenkrais hands-on lesson, it's called functional integration. It's about how do you integrate the whole function. And if you go to a class, that's why you might see people lying on the floor doing something tiny with their eyes and their toes.
Right. Okay.
They might be thinking about what's going on in their pelvis or their belly or their neck or their art. And Feldenkrais had this amazing way of taking that all apart and putting it back together again. So it's the very fundamental building blocks that you're addressing.
Well, funny you should say that, because a question that I have is, how do you characterize Feldenkrais compared with other or similar practices? Can you compare it to yoga, Pilates, dance, five rhythms?
Sure. So I would say it goes back behind all of that. You know, all these things are wonderful. All movement is wonderful. All these practices are great. But it's that moment where you hit a kind of, I get a lot of yoga people come because they love their yoga. The yoga's fabulous, but they've kind of hit a plateau or a barrier with something. And they're trying to relax into the pose. It's not really happening for them because there's something in their more deep in their fundamental patterns that is getting in the way that they can't quite access cognitively or by relaxation. And so a Feldenkrais lesson can pick it apart and can figure out, okay, so what's happening in that connection of the hip through the spine to the neck? Or what's happening in a deep way, asking you to slow down, to feel what you're doing more clearly and to vary the movement. You know, it's more in that territory of changing those deep patterns. So if you go to a dance lesson, you know, you're learning steps. If you go to five rhythms is wonderful, but you're being asked to shift your patterns a bit, yeah, by maybe you really like the slow part of five rhythms. What's great about a lot of these things is they're asking you to move in different ways. And then Feldenkrais gets back behind that and asks you to vary it in more detail, because you're probably still varying it within the patterns you've got. Maybe you're being pushed out of them a bit. And Feldenkrais can get kind of deeper, so it can support any of those practices really nicely. You know, if you go to a lesson, they're going to ask you to slow down, to reduce the intensity so that you can feel more. Because when you're busy doing a lot, it's very noisy in there. You can't feel. So, for example, if you have a light bulb on, it's dark, you put the light on, one light bulb, fine. But if there's 100 light bulbs on, you won't notice the one light bulb because there's too much already. If I put a biro on my hand, I can feel the weight of it. If I've already got a heavy book on my hand and I put a biro on it, I can't feel it because there's too much noise in my system from supporting. If I was lifting a piano and I put a biro on it.
Yeah, you're not going to feel that.
So a Feldenkrais lesson asks you to slow down, to maybe lie on the floor so that you're not busy with holding yourself up, so that you can trust in you. Make sense?
Yeah, that's really interesting. So I'm kind of curious to know, because I know that there are sort of some relationships with injuries and chronic pain with Feldenkrais, and even kind of some sports things. So there's kind of like new research basically that's kind of saying, like, if you have an internal focus on your movement, then it kind of detracts from what you're actually aiming to do. So for example, if someone is being told to like contract their abs or squeeze their glutes or something or strengthen their glutes, then in the realm of the movement that they're trying to perform, sometimes that actually takes away from what they're trying to do. If it's like tennis, for example, then they're not focused on where the ball is going because they're focused on like how their shoulder is moving. So I'm kind of curious to know, like, how does Feldenkrais deal with that?
Okay, so I've looked at some of that research. It's really interesting. So there's two things I'd say about it. One is, it's from the research I've seen, it's just not in the same realm as Feldenkrais. So when you say you're being asked to contract your abs, you're being asked to do that, Feldenkrais doesn't ask you to do anything like that.
Yeah.
It's asking you to do a movement, and the focus may be on, in a sense, external. Very often they're asking you, you know, maybe say if I put my hand on my head, to then move my elbow through space. Yeah, so the focus is drawing a line with the elbow through space. But then I'm being asked to feel what's happening in my spine when I do that. What's happening with my pelvis when I'm doing that? It's not saying move your spine like this. Feldenkrais isn't corrective. It's exploratory.
Okay.
It's finding things out. So it's at a completely different level to that research.
Okay, so it's like an observation almost.
Yeah, it's finding things out. It's listening in. You slow down, as I was saying, you slow down so that you can feel what you're doing. And then you may be asked to do some things, but you're not being told how to do them, which is the problem with that stuff. Because then once you start saying, contract this, do this, and correcting people, you've got a load of information and the system gets noisy again. And that's what interferes with doing the thing, yeah, with throwing the ball. So Feldenkrais going back behind that, it's not even saying how to throw the ball, you need to do it like this or like that. It's going, okay, let's lie down on the floor. What is it like to lift your arm? You lift your arm, what's happening? What's changing in your relationship to the ground? What's happening with your back? It's exploratory in that way. You never tell somebody how to do it. You get them to feel what they're doing. And then you might make suggestions of, okay, so what if you try this and try that? You know, you bring it. I'd have to kind of actually do a little lesson for you to know what I mean.
Okay, I'm so keen. Because you've described it as functional integration and also neuromuscular retraining. And so what you've just said about sort of lying on the floor and moving around, so how does it do the neuromuscular retraining?
So that's partly why I went into all that description at the beginning, so that you can understand the level that you're intervening at. You're intervening at the preset before you do anything. So it's looking at catching, asking you to feel very carefully, hence the slowness, reducing the intensity, doing less, not so you live your life like that, but so that in this moment, you can catch your first response.
So my next question is, what would you say is the relationship between patterns of behavior and movement?
Enormous. It's kind of the same thing. I mean, that's what Feldenkrais really felt he was doing. You know, he wasn't, as you would say, I'm interested in flexible minds, not flexible bodies. But he did feel that movement was a way in.
Yes.
And you know, obviously, the relationship between, I mean, emotion is a physiological event. It's not separate. But also, I think where Feldenkrais can really affect things is once you work out that something that you do, you've tended to do it always in the same way, a simple action. That you have a compulsive pattern that means you always do it like this or that or the other, regardless of the fact that that's going to end up limiting you or hurting you. You always do it like that because you don't know any other way of doing it. And then you do a Feldenkrais lesson that changes that. Or maybe you find it in another modality, you know, whatever you do. But you find a way that you realize that that doesn't have to be compulsive, that you could respond differently to that idea of that particular movement. Then that has a real implication for behavior as well. It's like, I don't have to grip my belly every time I do anything. Okay, there's another option. Maybe there are other options elsewhere in your life. And it's not taught like that in a Feldenkrais lesson specifically, because he was trying to get around people's cognitive brains and in underneath it. But once you start to get the feeling that, well, I could do it like this, I could do it like that. You know, that things are not set in stone. In fact, the thing about core is really important, because holding your core or gripping your core is really great in some circumstances and really terrible in other circumstances. And it's, we have a tendency to want to fix things, don't we? It's like, if this is good, it's good for everything. If this is bad, it's bad for everything. And Feldenkrais lessons have massive variety in them so that you can find all the different possibilities. This was a man who lived through turmoil, 1904 to 84, two world wars, and he was Jewish.
Yeah.
You know, he moved countries several times. He had to escape Hitler. His life reads like a thriller. When he was old, he still had five currencies and three passports sewn into his coat, something like that. He understood you needed to adapt, to be flexible, to respond. And so, you know, that's about behavior as much as it is about movement, but it's simpler to feel it in movement. It's really complex to get that idea emotionally, but in movement, it's simple. Oh, I could do this or that or the other. And that's there in the Feldenkrais method. It's like there's not one way to do things. It's what's best in this circumstance for this, in these conditions, what works best with less interference.
I want to just shift direction a hint and say Feldenkrais is very popular with actors. And I think that a lot of drama schools offer Feldenkrais classes. Why is that? Why? What is the appeal of Feldenkrais to actors?
Whole book on it that I wrote.
Oh, wow. Okay. Can you summarize that book in like 35 seconds?
If you're an actor, how people are who they are, how they move, how they speak, how they breathe, how they do anything that makes them unique is your meat and drink. And so a method that can help you feel what your patterns are, because, hey, you're not a tabula rasa. You're not going to just put a character on and off, but to feel what it is that you do and then be able to exploit that, change it subtly. I mean, like I just showed you just now, if I meet you with a stiff chest or a soft chest, I'm a different person. You know, if I move my hips like this or that, I'm a different person. And you can get really crass about that stuff, or you can look at it in real fine detail, which is what Feldenkrais does, and in whole system ways. So that's one use. Another use is, you know, that actors always moan about their posture. Feldenkrais has a really interesting way of approaching posture for actors that isn't about stand like this, because that's death for an actor. Because, you know, if you say to an actor, you've got to stand with your feet this far apart and your hips over your whatever and this, how many people stand like that? How many characters they play? And then how do they move off the spot? They need to be able to understand relationships. You know, so if I move my pelvis, what happens to my head? How does my whole spine move in different ways? And then once you can move in all directions, home is going to be in the middle. I'm using home as a word for posture here. I hope that's clear. And then there's also voice, and voice somehow turns out to be about your whole body, how you use your pelvis, your diaphragm, your ribs, your breath, your everything. Feldenkrais has lots for that. And there are some wonderful voice teachers in the Feldenkrais method. And then, of course, you know, people get injured. And I mean, is that enough? I could go on for hours about this.
I mean, in a nutshell, that was a very great summary. Thank you. And then you mentioned injuries. And that is obviously like my domain, my favorite subject, one of them. So can you tell us how Feldenkrais relates to injuries? It's a kind of like a two-part question. Let's just have that one for now.
It's again, it's everything that we've said. If you're injured, it may well be partly at least to do with some way that you use yourself that is compulsive, that you're repeatedly doing, that's putting stress somewhere, that's hurt somewhere. And then there's maybe an inciting incident, if you like, where something just goes snap. And Feldenkrais can help you deal with that. It can help deal with the compensatory patterns that come. So Moshe himself had a footballing injury. It's partly the way that Feldenkrais came about. He was very physical and a very aggressive footballer, I believe. He made very aggressive tackles and people often jumped on him. And he tore his AC, the cruciate ligament. He tore his meniscus. And this is back in the 30s when...
when you just have to get on with it.
Yeah, get on with it or don't walk or slice the knee open and someone stitches things. And so he didn't have the operation, but he worked out that after the initial trauma was over, that there were certain days that he could walk very well and days that he really couldn't. And he spent a lot of time working out what is it. Sometimes it was his emotional state that threw his knee into trauma. Mm-hmm. Not from some woo-woo kind of way, but because stress is physiological, he would go into his patterns and it would affect how the weight was going through his knee. He would be involved in a very minute exploration of what he was doing with that leg. Mark Rees, who wrote his biography, writes this beautiful bit about seeing Feldenkrais apparently having a rest, lying down. And then he realizes that he's actually moving. He's doing these tiny little movements with his hip, with his back, with his knee, with his foot. He's kind of playing with all those relationships in order to stabilize his knee. Myself, I tore my knee, had an operation. They took out a whole chunk of meniscus out of my knee that was just flapping about in there.
Sometimes I wish that, like, with a meniscus injury, why can't they just, like, super glue it back together? That wouldn't that be great?
I felt great afterwards because, look, my knee was no longer unstable. But what I realized, this was before I did Feldenkrais seriously, you know, I didn't even realize that it had happened, but I wasn't really using that leg anymore properly. I didn't really know this until I started doing a lot of Feldenkrais for completely different reasons to do with being an actor and a movement director and having a child and all sorts. I went on to the Feldenkrais training and about halfway through, I realized that I had stopped jumping up from the ground, running. I'd become a person with a bad knee, even though it was kind of better. And I only realized that because it started coming back. Mm-hmm. My leg had been really wasted and I'd done a lot of physio exercises to get the muscles back, but I had to keep doing them or it wasted again because I wasn't using the leg properly. And then with all those funny explorations doing Feldenkrais, and then one particular hands-on lesson where the teacher, who's a very experienced Feldenkrais teacher called Roger Russell, made me go right into my pattern. And it turns out that I have a twisting and bending pattern that people know as scoliosis, right? Uh-huh. But it's mild. But if you're standing, aren't you? If you push your right hip forward and then up, feel what it does to your knee and your foot.
Yeah.
It's vulnerable. That was an accident waiting to happen. Anyone listening can try it. You move your right hip forward and up. Something has to happen in your spine, in your ribs. Your knee probably moves a little inwards. Your foot doesn't plant the same. That was an accident waiting to happen. The medial anterior horn of the meniscus. And it turned out that I needed to play a lot with my ribs, with my spine, with that whole scoliotic pattern, into it, out of it, twisting this way, that way. At the end of that lesson, I stood on my right leg and I didn't know I hadn't before. I was standing on it and it felt completely different. And I went in and out of that for years afterwards. And I did karate and I did running and everything on top of that, and kept having to go back to the drawing board and exploring and building and exploring and training and exploring and training. And now there's no problem, no problem at all.
Really? Okay. So now it's like perfect, fine, happy, done.
Yeah.
A distant memory. Amazing.
Yeah. And I'm 55. I meant to have arthritis from that by now. There's no problem. I'm a second Dan in karate and I run barefoot and I don't have any problem with my knee.
Like actual barefoot?
Actual barefoot. Well, depends what the weather's like and what the terrain is like. I've got some little Vibrams, but then whenever I can, I'll take them because it's so nice.
That's so cool.
But that's going back to the drawing board with Feldenkrais over and over, improving the pattern. You know, oh, now I want to run a half marathon. Oh, that's all a bit difficult. Okay, back to the exploring. Okay, running gently, building up. You know, it's a mixture of the two things, the pattern and the strength, and the same with karate.
I'm curious to know, like, how long roughly was it between when you started doing the Feldenkrais for your knee and for your knee no longer to be an issue?
In a sense, it happened really quickly. But then I would have a relapse. You know, I'd do something and it would be crap again. But that relapse would get shorter and shorter, and the relapses would come further and further apart. And I don't know, then you don't really know. You kind of suddenly wake up one day and go, oh, nothing's happened with my knee for like 2 years. Gosh, I hadn't noticed that.
I think that is often the case with pain. It's like you have it. You don't have it, but you don't realize that you don't have it. And then suddenly, like you just said, like, oh, that thing that I had, where's it gone?
Yeah. I sometimes have to remind clients that they had back pain when they first came because they've forgotten. Because we've moved on now. We're doing a triathlon or something. You know, they've moved on from their back pain and they've realized Feldenkrais helped them do things better. So
amazing. I'd love to know, because chronic pain is so diverse and different for lots of different people. So it could be like a neck thing, a knee thing, a foot thing, or whatever. How and why is Feldenkrais useful? And also, given that chronic pain isn't always necessarily related to some sort of tissue damage, very rarely related to a tissue damage, how can Feldenkrais help with that?
There's one thing that Feldenkrais really does that I haven't sort of mentioned. We've talked about lowering intensity. There's a thing that is another very big, these topics are huge, complicated thing, which is your sense of safety. So it turns out, and very often people with chronic pain will come to one-to-ones rather hands-on, is that I spend a lot of time just enabling people to feel safer, to lower their activation in the whole central nervous system, you know, to be calmer on that kind of axis of arousal and calm, bring all that down, which you can do with soft, slow, gentle. Got someone coming at the minute who has got tissue damage, but it may or may not be that that's causing all the pain. We don't know. If I can lower his activation, then the pain starts to diminish, because we all know pain is brain, it's top down, it's quite weird. And then that starts to unfreeze some of the issues around this deal, and we can start to find more movement without pain.
If you're thinking about movement as patterns and habits, there is often pain embedded in that. You know, if it's chronic pain, it's like brain plasticity gone wrong, hasn't it? It's like it's taken over. And so it's trying to find pathways of movement that don't include the pain. And there are lots of techniques for that, for reversals. So instead of moving the leg, moving the pelvis, instead of moving the shoulder, moving the ribs. And also just this thing of softening everything down. It's really difficult. I'm not going to say it's an easy thing to do, because it is top down, and because you're really involved with this person's anxiety around the pain as well as the pain itself. It's very complex.
That's super, super interesting. I have one last question, which is, you do a martial art called, is this correct, Goju Ryu Karate, or is it just karate?
Well, karate, there's a million different styles. I mean, you know, karate is not one thing.
Oh.
There's Shotokan, Wado Ryu, Shito Ryu, Kyokushinkai. I mean, there's just a million different.
Okay.
So what I do is a traditional form that comes from a particular area in Okinawa called Naha. And the person who developed it, that area had strong relationships with China. So it developed out of their own Naha-te, which was a kind of self-defense that was indigenous, mixed with southern forms of white crane, of Chinese boxing, things like that. And it's called Goju Roots.
Okay, and so how does your karate practice support and challenge the Feldenkrais?
Yeah, challenge, absolutely. Well, and the other way around, you know. Karate, I remember describing, I've written a couple of blogs on it on my website. There are times when it feels like doing Feldenkrais in a pressure cooker, you know, because you really know your habits. You really discover some things when somebody's throwing a punch in your face. How do you respond? And Moshe was pretty interested in that. That's how he developed his self-defense ideas, was what is your first response? But from there, I found that Feldenkrais enables me to do the karate a bit in the way I described around injuries and stuff. Because whenever there's something difficult, like round kick.
Is that a roundhouse kick?
A roundhouse, yeah.
Like that.
We have a sort of.
Okay, that I just tried to do very badly.
Yeah, it's really difficult to do it well and with power, or a sidekick are surprisingly difficult. But there are lots of lessons within the Feldenkrais method that help break it down and get into how do you internally rotate your leg.
I know, it's the internal rotation that's so difficult.
And what you have to do with your ribs to do that, because people try and do it just in their hip joint or rip their hip joint up, you know.
Uh-huh.
So for me, it's been really helpful to avoid injury, to slow the whole karate thing down, because it's super fast. I mean, man, karate is fast. And they think they practice it slowly. And for me, it's like, oh God, you just no idea what slow means. And it's very forceful. It's very powerful. So I came out of Feldenkrais training into karate. It's like, oh my God, how do I marry this really fast movement with this very slow practice?
Wow.
But the slow practice is not slow for its own sake. It's there to enable you to do the things you want to do.
Okay. Yeah.
I wanted to know how to be powerful. I'm a tiny little woman. You guys on the podcast can't see me. You know, I'm like 50 kilograms on a good day, and I'm 5'3". So, you know, the idea of having power is interesting. And Feldenkrais got me a long way there, because you organize your architecture for it. And then karate is like, right, you got to do this and do it at speed. And really, it was another whole layer of learning. And I've been going back and forward between them, feeling how they impact. It would take me hours to explain that. But is that enough?
No, that's really, really, really interesting.
I can give you an example if you want.
Yes, please.
So when you're learning a punch, you know, you go to learn a punch, and karate does straight punches with a hand straight out in front of you. It's like, where does the power come for that punch? And in those kind of martial arts systems, they basically, you just do it a lot. And it's mirror neuron stuff. You're watching the sensei, the instructor, and picking it up. You know, they'll say various things about keep that elbow in, move that elbow out. Use your hips.
Yeah.
What the hell does that mean? Use your hips. So go back to Feldenkrais, lie on the floor, plant one foot, bring one arm towards the ceiling. How does moving that hip move my arm? What is that? How do I move the pelvis so that it travels through the spine to move that arm forward? How do I pull that hip back, that it pulls my arm back?
Mm-hmm.
Let's improve that relationship through every vertebra of my spine. Okay, now I've got something that I can do. That kind of thing. And then come back to the karate, do it slowly, feel what's that, what's my shoulder blade doing? Where's my elbow moving in space? What am I doing? Am I doing this all with my neck? How do I feel it from the pelvis? Speed it up.
Okay, so you gain the awareness from the Feldenkrais and you sort of transfer that awareness into the karate practice.
Same with the round kick, you know? I don't know how to do a round kick. I can't make my hip do that. So I mine Feldenkrais like a miner, you know, finding those lessons that involve turning the leg in. And that involves, so how does the pelvis go? How do the ribs,
yeah.
How do they go? Okay, now put that up on its feet. How does that work on its feet? How do I do it in sitting? Hold my foot and take the knee inside and outside of the elbow. And then come back to the round kick. Oh, now it goes better. How do I stand on the other leg? That's the really important bit.
Yeah, so that's like real life functional integration, it sounds like.
Feldenkrais is great for that.
Yeah, I really, really, really want to do some more Feldenkrais lessons. Where can people find out more about your classes and the work that you do?
You can find me on my website. It's Feldenkrais Works. That's Feldenkrais Works, all one word, .co.uk. If you browse around on my website, it's got all my classes and websites and everything. There's also a guild, though, and the website for that is simple. It's just www.feldenkrais.co.uk. And if you go on there and you go find a teacher, find a class, you can find what's near you. Of course, all teachers are different. You have to find one that you click with, you know, that works for you.
Amazing. Well, that was hugely educational for me. So, Victoria, thank you so much indeed for talking to me today and sharing the love. I feel like I've learned so much about Feldenkrais and I'm so inspired to now do some more Feldenkrais practice.
I think it fits with a lot of things we talk about.
Totally. And I think part of the trouble is like finding like where these things occur, like where the classes actually take place, you know? But now I've discovered you. Thank you. And I really am going to just get involved because I think I want to experience the magic more for myself.
Excellent. Well, I hope I made some sense. It's a pretty difficult thing to talk about because it's so huge.
Yeah, well, it sounds it, but like so interesting. So thank you again so much.
Thank you very much for letting me come on and witter away and talk nonsense about Feldenkrais.
Thank you for being an expert. Thank you for having done all the work that you've done to learn the stuff that you've learned and share with us. So that's all we have time for today. Join us again for next time.
That was Get a Move On with Amy Slevin. If you enjoyed that, we'll be back next week with a slightly different topic. And if you didn't enjoy that, we'll be back next week with a slightly different topic. Thanks for listening.